Con el under $3 menu de McDonald's, un sausage burrito es solo $1.50. Así que échale salsa picante o ketchup a tu sausage burrito con todo en McDonald's. Solo por tiempo limitado. Precios y participación pueden variar. Precios con entrega pueden ser más altos.
Ever wondered how a book gets made into a movie?
Or how to master the art of cooking?
Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef.
On our podcast, we're going to be serving you a fresh perspective of the entertainment industry alongside our favorite celebrity guests.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And welcome back. Craig and Joe here with you with the news of Derrick Henry signing his contract extension. We're going to focus a little bit on wide receivers today on the show, Joe. And certainly you talk about opportunities. There are some players in fantasy that we talked about at running back that didn't make the most of their opportunities because they couldn't get in the end zone. But certainly there are some other players that are at other positions that didn't cash in that basically could have had an opportunity for more fantasy points at the wide receiver position. And so now with the stats and advanced metrics, you can sort of point out different players that may have some more upside based on things that didn't happen the year before. And I, for one, am all for that.
Yeah, and it looks like some of the deeper metrics from fantasy baseball are starting to trickle over into the fantasy football world. And our good pal, Mike Tagliere of Fantasy Pros, who obviously comes on this program quite a bit with us and also is a contributor to the Fantasy Black Book 2020 on Amazon. That dude puts out some great stats. And what he's done is basically a case study depending on the depth of target, the location of the target, how many fantasy points players should have scored as opposed to what they actually scored. And he's done a really deep dive on this, and I wanted to pick out a few that I think were really interesting discussion points because they were guys that really, you know, last year, if you look at where their opportunities were versus where they finished, they're off. And whether or not we think in 2020 things can change, and I think some of these guys we're going to be positive on, and others we think maybe not so much. But let's start with Julian Edelman, who, believe it or not, because of the volume he got in that Patriots offense, was actually number two in terms of potential fantasy points. That's opportunity for fantasy points as a wide receiver. Of all people, Julian Edelman was number two because of the amount of targets he gets and where he gets those targets. Now, Julian Edelman is not a guy who's going to high point a ball in the end zone. He's not a guy who's going to get in jump balls and things like that. So touchdowns have always been a little trickier for him. They do run a couple interesting plays over there at the goal line sometimes to get him involved. But for the most part, it was a very disappointing season for him and for Tom Brady, obviously, in that offense in the second half. Now you got a new quarterback here with Cam Newton. If you look at where he actually finished, he still finished number 10 overall. I don't feel like the target volume is going to just vanish for him with Cam Newton. I think it's still going to be relatively high in this offense. And my big concern for Julian Edelman always is, where is his body right now? Because he is taking so much abuse in a short period of time. He is, look, he's that guy that goes over the middle. He's that guy that takes the hit. He's that guy that tries to get the extra yard every single time. And his body has definitely paid the price for it. And although he wasn't a wide receiver his entire career, he was a quarterback in college, I think he's played enough NFL wide receiver where he is a dicey investment. So when I tell you he had so much opportunity last year and then still only finished 10th, do you think with Cam Newton you're going to bid on him as, let's say, a wide receiver two in a PPR league this year with the new quarterback? Or are you afraid of the body holding up over 16 games?
Yeah, I mean, I'm afraid of him and I'm afraid of Cam Newton. So I don't know. I think that, look, there's certainly a spot for him for me on my roster later on in the draft. But even with the notion of what you're saying here, which is excellent, a lot of these stats, I'm probably not going to buy in on this year.
What if you could get him? And again, I'm seeing this now because you're seeing some of these mock drafts and you're seeing some of these industry drafts happen where he is slipping into that wide receiver three grouping pretty consistently. If he slips to the top of that, is that where it gets tempting?
I suppose. I mean, even if Newton isn't good, I suppose Stidham has a chance to be good too. So it's a fair assessment. Wide receiver three is fair.
I think as wide receiver three, I feel pretty good about him. As a two, I don't know. I'd have to have two fantastic running backs in order to be starting that way, I think, with Edelman at this point in his career, because you can't afford to have a guy missing two or three games a year. And I feel like Edelman is a high-end candidate for missing time now, where he's at with his body. I mean, he's put, you know, again, the torn ACL, this, that, the shoulder issue, like he's, plus the concussions, he's really had a lot in a short period of time. And he's been a great player. And it's amazing to look at where he stands all time. Because where he stands all time, especially in the playoffs, we're talking, it's like him and Jerry Rice. That's madness when you consider it. But hey, he's made the most of the opportunities, and the Pats have given him plenty. Another guy who had a lot of opportunities last year was Allen Robinson, one of our favorite wide receivers last year in terms of consistency. He was actually number three overall in potential points last year. Unfortunately, he finished just as wide receiver 11, but we could attribute that to the inability of the quarterback to make big plays at big moments there and get him the ball in the end zone. So I don't have a lot of upside for Foles. I'm thinking that, look, it's either Trubisky finally proving that he's worth the investment, or it's just going to be still spinning their wheels for the Chicago Bears this year. How do you feel about Allen Robinson? Because right now, this is a guy who's going as a wide receiver too. I don't think he has a ton of upside, but I look at this potential opportunity for fantasy points, Greg, and I'm thinking to myself, wow, maybe we're selling Allen Robinson short if Trubisky can find something that he did a couple years ago, which is starting to show you he could be a quarterback in this league.
Yeah, I think Robinson has shown that he's more or less quarterback-proof to this point. And regardless of who the Bears quarterback is, I think the opportunities will be there. So as in terms of all the wide receivers that we're going to talk about today, I think that he's somebody that I would target. I did have him in a league last year. I tried to bench him everywhere I possibly could. It just wasn't possible because he put up good numbers every week. Right. Were they great? No. But he's the kind of guy that you always feel like you think you can do better. But in the end, he's pretty solid.
I would love to have seen what Allen Robinson could have done in his career if he played with a Drew Brees or somebody like that. Because you think about it.
I love Bortles. I think Bortles still has some upside there, Joe.
Yeah, I think you need to let that go, Craig Mish. That's what I think. I think you need to let that go. But like Blake Bortles, he's got to play with Foles and Trubisky. You know, I mean,
where is Bortles these days? Dallas or somewhere?
No, Andy Dalton's in Dallas. Bortles is somewhere. Yeah, Bortles is somewhere. All right. Robert Woods is somewhere, too, and he is number seven. He was the Rams. Right. That's where he is with Robert Woods. That's right. Of course. I should have known better. So Robert Woods last year, obviously the knock on him was he only had two touchdowns. That's fair. I mean, that is a big knock. But in terms of opportunity for fantasy points, the guy was number seven overall. Now, he finished 17 overall. However, if you just marginalize those touchdowns and gave him, let's say, five or six, all of a sudden, he shoots way up there into like the 12-13 range overall. Like he takes a big jump with just a few touchdowns. And you start to see those more in the second half come his way and sort of targets in the red zone. Now, my question for you is, with the current setup or lack thereof of this running game, where it's basically a mess, they're going to have to throw the ball a ton. Cooper Kupp's going to get his. Robert Woods, I think, is going to get his. And I think this is a great time to buy in on Woods on the cheap based on the down year of touchdowns, because I think the two is an anomaly.
I'm not so sure. I'm a little down on Goff. I'm a little down on the Rams overall. And Woods is one of those guys that it wouldn't surprise me to just see a fall off and done, honestly. Mm-hmm. I know it's crazy to say, but he's been around a while now. And
1,000 yards again last year. Just yeah, drop 1,000 yards.
I'm going to bet against Woods this year. I'm not going to be in I'm not going to be in at all on the Rams, but in particular, I just...
And Cooks is gone, too. I mean, somebody's got to put up some kind of stats, because Jared Goff's not going to throw for, you know, 2,500 yards. You know what I mean? Like, somebody's got to be catching the ball out there.
Maybe so. I don't really like that explanation. Usually,
well, it's not an explanation. It's more just unfortunate, simple math of, you know, Jared Goff's going to throw for 4,000 yards thereabout, sometimes way more. And you got to figure
that's good for at least 2,000. Yeah, but just by saying that somebody's got to do it doesn't always add up to that. It could be somewhere else. I mean,
it could, but you look at the rest of this roster, and I don't think Tyler Higbee's going to be that guy to get 1,000.
Yeah, but they have other wide receivers pretty good.
Reynolds is okay.
Yeah, Reynolds, yeah.
Yeah, but he's not as good as Kupp. He's basically a lesser version of Cooper Kupp, in my opinion.
There's just some teams that I'm not as high on their offense, and the Rams are one of those. I think that they've sort of peaked.
Yeah.
And look,
I agree with. I think the Rams.
I don't think that Woods repeats the year that he had last year.
Fair enough. I think he's going to repeat the year he had last year with another four or five touchdowns, and that's going to make him a great value on draft day. So Craig and I are on the opposite end of that one. Mm-hmm. But we are on the same page with the Rams window closing very quickly here. I think this could get ugly real fast, and Sean McVay might go from boy wonder to boy looking for a job very quickly if things don't get better in Los Angeles for him. The next guy on this list is Tyler Boyd, who had a lot of expectations last year. And let's be honest, he fell short of them. He ended up finishing as wide receiver number 23. But in terms of opportunity for points, he was all the way up at number 8. Now, without A.J. Green on the field, obviously you can point to that as seeing a lot more double coverage, and that becomes more difficult. Now, theoretically, at least to the start of the season, right now, A.J. Green is a Cincinnati Bengal, and we would imagine he's on the field with Joe Burrow. And if so, I think this bodes very well for Tyler Boyd, who is one of these guys that 2 years ago had a 1,000-yard season, had half a dozen touchdowns, looked like a really decent fantasy investment. Last year did not work out. We know it was a disaster for the Bengals. That's why they ended up with Joe Burrow. But at the same time, is it time to buy back in on Tyler Boyd with A.J. Green back on the field?
Not at all. I am not in on Boyd. I think that he is supremely overrated. He runs bad routes. He drops the ball. He had that opportunity last year with Finley there playing, and those dudes were throwing the ball 35, 40 times some games to come back in games, and he still couldn't get his points. He did have two really good games at the end of the season. That is true. But I think that he is not the Calvin Ridley to the Julio Jones on Atlanta. If you put Green back there, I think somebody else takes Boyd's spot. I think he had a shot last year. It didn't go his way. I would not buy back in again this year.
Yeah, well, Ross is still there, too. Higgins is there now, too. So we'll see if anybody else can emerge as the number two. Jamison Crowder emerged as the number one target for Mr. Sam Darnold last year. Got a ton of volume. He actually, in terms of opportunity for fantasy points, ranked number 17 overall, despite finishing at number 31. Crowder's a guy I love as a wide receiver four this year, if you can get him there. It may be as a three in a full point PPR I like as well, but I feel like once again, I look at Mims, I look at what else is out there here for the Jets, and I feel like Crowder's going to get a ton of work. I think Le'Veon Bell's going to catch a ton of balls too in this offense, the way they're set up right now. But basically, by default, Crowder is that guy. So is this another dude where you look at and say, hey, good value in full point PPR?
Yeah,
maybe he doesn't have a ton of touchdowns, but he has points.
Yeah, no, he's going to get points every single week. So, I mean, you talk about consistency. The last two guys that we talked about, one supremely inconsistent and the other very consistent. So I would start Crowder over Boyd any day. And so I do like this pick here.
Another guy getting lost in the shuffle right now because of the addition of DeAndre Hopkins is Christian Kirk, who had 100 targets last year. A lot of people don't realize that. 100 targets is a lot of targets. And yes, Larry Fitzgerald's still there. But when you add a weapon like Hopkins, that means he gets a ton of attention in the secondary. That means a lot of other opportunity for single coverage for other guys. Yes, Larry Fitzgerald is still around. And yes, he is a Hall of Famer. But Christian Kirk might be that guy. At, again, he finished number 26 overall in terms of possible points, ended up finishing 40 overall in reality. But I think this is another guy that's being drafted as a wide receiver 5 or 4, depending on the size of your league, that could really shoot up boards as the season goes on, because the Cardinals are going to run a ton of plays. I think they're going to be the surprise team for me this year.
Yeah, well, look, they could have a dynamic offense. They have three really solid weapons at wide receiver and maybe a good running back, depending on what Drake does. I think Kirk's numbers will be more or less the same, but maybe with more touchdowns this year, because that should open up a little bit more for him. And he is essentially their biggest deep threat that they have. So, yeah, I mean, I could take a shot on Kirk. If he opened up the season as my wide receiver 3, sure. I would have no issue with that. Two,
hey,
is a little strong,
more,
I think.
A couple more touchdowns, and he's going to finish there. I mean, that's a lot right there.
I think he could. Very well could. All right, coming up next, we're going to dive back into some odds in the FanDuel Sportsbook. Will the Braves make the playoffs in 2020? Will the Cubs make the playoffs in 2020? We'll have the answers for you when we come back next. So don't go away. More Sports Grid is coming up next.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Have you written a book and need some insight into what comes next?
Or are you passionate about cooking and want to know how to make it your career?
Or maybe you just want to hear insider stories about the entertainment industry. Either way, we've got you covered with the Two Guys from Hollywood podcast. I'm Alan Nevins, a literary agent and talent manager.
And I'm Joey Santos, a columnist and celebrity chef. And on our podcast, Two Guys from Hollywood, we bring our expertise to the table with, of course, delicious cocktails and all kinds of recipes for you to try at home.
So grab a drink and join us. We've got a wide range of celebrity guests and Hollywood insiders to discuss pop culture, publishing, and entertainment. And we'll provide you with an unfiltered and sometimes brutally honest show about Hollywood.
As we like to say, we don't dish, we serve.
Listen and follow Two Guys from Hollywood on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you listen to podcasts. We'll talk at you soon.
Hey, yo, welcome back, everybody. Fantasy Sports Today right here on Sports Grid. And our next guest, you obviously know from Fantasy Live and, of course, the podcast on NFL Network. He is also now the host on Sirius XM Radio of Fantasy Dirt. He's the one, the only, Michael Fabiano. Michael, welcome to the program. We appreciate you dropping in.
Thank you for having me, dude. I mean, like, I'm looking behind you and I see you're a Mets fan, huh?
I'm a loser Mets fan. These are the burdens I bear in life. But again, I'm also a Patriots fan. As you see the Tom Brady paraphernalia above me, probably.
Yeah. See, I'm good with that because I root for the Yankees, mm-hmm. the Cowboys, mm-hmm. and the Lakers. And what do those three teams all have in common?
Winning.
They were all the teams that were winning when I started rooting for sports teams back in the early 80s. So I get crap constantly for that. But I don't have, like, the geographic limitation on fandom. You can root for whoever the hell you want, man. It is what it is. As long as you don't jump off the bandwagon and jump on somebody else's bandwagon, then I don't like that. But if you're faithful to the team, come on. It could be the Mets. It could be the Patriots. I see the Bulls, maybe. Is that the Bulls back?
That's a Michael Jordan USA jersey. Yes, you have a very astute eye. I like this. I don't even know if it's in the box, but it doesn't matter because now everybody in their mind can see it. But, yes, there's a Michael Jordan USA Dream Team jersey that I have from my childhood, by the way, that I just decided to throw up there in a frame. But, yeah, man, I'm with you. Like, I grew up in the 80s in New York where in Brooklyn the Mets were king. Okay. That was it. My dad had a mustache. Keith Hernandez had a cool mustache. That was it. Like, you know, it was all needed to be said and done from then on.
So now I know what your favorite Seinfeld episode is of all time.
Of course. But I'll tell you what, if you ever ask me to help you move, I'll probably do it because I like it. I just want you to know that.
Well, what about if I asked you to drive you to the airport though?
I'm not driving him to the airport.
That was great. That was so good. And we didn't even practice that. That was great.
So let's talk a little football because I know we have like we could do this all day and maybe we will. But in the meantime, let's start and talk about your Cowboys a little bit here because obviously a big draft for them picking up CeeDee Lamb. Randall Cobb, 800 yards gone from that offense and receiving. I don't see any reason why he can't possibly fill somewhat of that role. In the Black Book last year, Dak Prescott was my guy in terms of best quarterback on the board, return on investment, and boy, did he return in a big way. I think he's going to be somewhere close to that. You look at this offense, they're completely loaded. Do you see all these guys keeping up, or is there somebody that you're fading from this bunch? How are you approaching the Cowboys this year in fantasy?
I can't fade a Cowboy. Come on, man. I can't do that.
You got to put the personal aside.
I typically do.
That's what we do.
I get it. I understand. Okay. I understand. Yeah. But I think Dak is going to end up being great. Like he's my QB3. He was the QB2 last year. Only Lamar had more fantasy points. And now he gets CeeDee Lamb. Zeke is Zeke. No worries. Top 3 or 4 pick. Amari would be the one guy that I'm a little bit concerned about because of the durability. You know, he was so great in the first half of last year, second half of the season. The injuries really sort of wore him down. His numbers were very inconsistent and unreliable. Michael Gallup is a guy that I feel like I'd love to have as a wide receiver 3. He's got to stop dropping the damn ball. I think he was second in drop passes last year behind, I believe it was Julian Edelman, because if he becomes unreliable for Dak, then they've got CeeDee Lamb and he could potentially usurp Michael Gallup. I don't think that's going to happen during his rookie campaign, but you're right. There are opportunities out there. You lose Randall Cobb, you lose Jason Witten, although Blake Jarwin, you know, we'll see some of those targets as well. There are opportunities out there for CeeDee Lamb, maybe not to make an elite impact, maybe not even to make a great impact, but to make a good impact during his rookie campaign in Dallas. I could see 40 to 50 catches. I could see 700 yards. I could see 5 touchdowns as a rookie wide receiver, especially when you've had no OTAs,
right?
You might have preseason or might not. That would be pretty good because the rookies are going to have a tough time transitioning because they haven't had those valuable workouts during the entire offseason to sort of, you know, build their rapport with their new teammates and learn the offense. It's going to be really weird, man.
Yeah, and I've been saying the same thing, so it's good to hear someone else say it out loud because it is difficult. Now, I think some guys will transcend that. I think certain guys like the Judys of the world have that kind of talent that they can, you know, rise above those scenarios. But for the most part, when you're not the main target guy in the offense, I think it's much harder. You know, when there's already guys established ahead of you, it's a little easier for Judy maybe than some others. I mean, Sutton's there, but still it's kind of wide open a little bit. But CeeDee Lamb is another one where you're like, ah, there's so many other options. I think that's what makes it tough. Let's talk about the Giants too, because I just had Bob Harris, your co-host there on the Fantasy Dirt, who I love dearly. He is he is my hero. He is my hero, my mentor.
He's your bald brother.
He is my bald brother.
Are you a Curb Your Enthusiasm guy?
Pretty much. Pretty much. I mean, you know,
we'll
do an hour together. You and
I mean, we have
got a codec. I can still log in there on Sirius and do a show with you.
Jeff Garland was on my show.
Was he really?
Ago.
You get all the celebrities.
I know, Jeff.
I do. You're a celebrity.
I'm not a celebrity. I am lucky enough to know celebrities. Jeff, I love. He's great. Every time he comes, Fabs, I love you. But I tell you something. He was throwing F's and S's all over the place. I thought it was hilarious.
Should know better by then.
I thought it was hilarious. You know, the producers didn't really think it was all that funny. But that's Jeff. He's great. Anyways, go ahead.
But he should know better. He's a pro. Like, he got to know.
I didn't really tell him. I figured, you know, he knew he was going to be doing an interview. But SiriusXM, you say, oh, I'm going on SiriusXM. I can mother F and S and everything, like, and it's not a problem. It's not the Howard Stern show, though.
No, it is, you know, it is not.
On the fantasy sports. Yeah. Network,
I was there for 5 years, my friend. I know, believe me, I got you on that one. But yeah, he should know better. But I thought the last season of Curb was terrific. I don't know about you.
And
they're coming out
with, dude, I know. It just keeps getting better.
And he was built for this coronavirus thing with his neurosis. This is he's been training his whole life for this. I feel
it's going to be awesome. Like, this season coming up, they have to have the whole coronavirus thing as a part of it, as a theme for the entire – last season was so good.
It was
so good. Thank you for your service. I thought that kid looked a little Asian. I mean, like, he's so funny.
The hat to get out of lunch. It was all about the hat to get out of lunch. That was my favorite thing ever.
I met Larry David, at NFL Network years ago. Rich Eisen used to do his podcast from the NFL Network.
Oh, I saw Rich had the Latte Larry's cup. Yes, I saw on your show.
Dude, I have a Latte Larry shirt, And my son has one, and so does my girlfriend. But we met in the makeup room, So I'm, getting makeup. He's getting makeup. And I come up to him. I say, hey, Larry, Michael Fabiano, nice to meet you. Hey, Fabiano. I says, yeah, it's a good Irish name. And Larry David, belly laughed.
Right. Man, you make Larry David laugh.
I felt like saying, good night, folks.
Good night, folks. Leave on a high note. See, always.
Like Costanza does. Mm-hmm. I didn't do it. He was awesome. Yeah. He dresses exactly like he does in the show.
Absolutely. Him and my father have the same wardrobe. It is hilarious.
It was a lot of fun.
Identical wardrobe, those two guys.
But that's one of the greatest moments of my life. I made Larry David, who I feel like is one of the two or three funniest dudes on the damn planet, laugh.
Oh, absolutely. My kids every morning. I mean, we are so down the rabbit hole. We might as well just do this. My kids every morning now in the summer, they were home. They're waking up later. So like on TBS, the reruns of Seinfeld are on. So we've been watching them over breakfast. And my daughter in the pool the other day was annoyed about something the other one did. And she said, Serenity now. And I almost died. I was like, look at this. I am winning as a father.
My 10-year-old loves Curb Your Enthusiasm. I'm a bad parent. I know
See,
it. Because
I won't. I haven't.
There are bad words.
She's 10 too. They are.
He has watched it like when we didn't know that he was sort of in the room. Like, he would come in and he'd watch and then he'd leave. Right. And we had it on. He loves Larry David. Yes, there are topics that he shouldn't probably be watching on there, including, I can't say it on the show, but go ahead.
Let's keep going.
We got to have this conversation another time.
Anytime, whenever you're free, you and I just talk off air or on air. I don't care. Either way, I could care less. As long as we're talking. Let's talk about Miles Sanders as long as we're talking too, because this is another guy too. Let's stick with the NFC East. We'll do a little theme here. Miles Sanders was a guy for me last year that the ADP kind of rose as we often see, like as draft season goes on, we see ADP rising and things like that because of preseason and other stuff like that. And there was always reason for concern. But last year, that was a guy that I didn't draft, but I absolutely acquired in a lot of leagues because people started to lose faith. Is that going to be a trend you see this year with these same rookie running backs you see too? Because Miles Sanders was a guy that got going as the year went on. And under these pandemic conditions and what's happened, do you think this is another position where maybe you're not in the best scenario, drafting and paying big time capital for Taylor, for Swift, those guys, maybe it's better to acquire them in a trade as you get in maybe 5-6 weeks into the season.
So I don't think the pandemic has anything to do with it. I mean, you know, what does a running back need to do? Oh, hand me the ball. I find the hole and run. Okay.
Pass protect.
I get that too. But if a guy is prolific in pass protecting in college, there's a good chance he's going to be able to move that into the next level. And there are guys out there who are going to certainly need to improve their pass protection. There's no doubt about that. But for me, here's what happened with this draft class. The running back position is loaded. But all the great guys ended up being drafted by teams that already had incumbent starters. I mean, like, you met Jonathan Taylor, right? Marlon Mack. You mentioned Clyde Edwards-Helaire, Damian Williams.
All of them.
So you, like, Damian Williams is going to open the season as a starter.
Well, here's a question. I'm going to ask you this question. Do you feel like there's a pivot there where everybody's trending to the young guys? Is there any point in time where you start reacting to the others? Because in this scenario we're in, let's say a guy tests positive like we see in baseball. They could miss 2 weeks. If that happens, it's the other guy's backfield for at least 2 weeks potentially.
No doubt about that. I mean, like Damian Williams has started to rise back up a little bit because there's been a lot of chatter around him. Right. Like, I mean, if he's an eighth or ninth round pick, okay. Like Mark Ingram, if he's getting drafted within a round or two of J.K. Dobbins, okay. You know, Kerryon Johnson, he's going to end up being later. Marlon Mack is going to end up being later, but Marlon Mack could open the season as a starter too.
Had 1,000 yards last year.
I know he's not like a garbage back. Like he was good, and he's young, and he's explosive. So like,
and only 1 year left, right? You would think they'd want to burn him and turn him.
Exactly, and he's in that contract year, so he's going to want to actually put up some numbers because he's going to, I would think, probably not be with the Colts next season. I mean, time will tell. So there's benefit to this. You have to have faith in the rookie running back that you're drafting that at some point during the course of the season, they're going to take over the job. Like Clyde Edwards-Helaire, I don't think he's going to be the guy in week one. Maybe it won't be until week four or week five, but he will eventually, I feel like, lead that backfield in touches. Last year, Damian Williams, who should have been the MVP in the Super Bowl, by the way, from a fantasy perspective, 21% of his points came on two runs, like two plays. That was it. He had the two long touchdowns. And so I don't know that I think – He's certainly not a better athlete than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. He's certainly not a better pass catcher than Clyde Edwards-Helaire. But because he's a veteran who helped this team win a Super Bowl, there's respect there, and he's going to end up being the guy, I believe, to start the season. But you have DeAndre Swift. I feel like he's going to be the guy throughout the course of the season, but Kerryon Johnson is there. Nothing is for certain here, especially when it comes to these rookie backs and the veterans that are in front of them in the depth chart. We could end up seeing some messy backfield committees start the season. We really could. You have to have faith that at some point talent and upside will overcome a veteran status on the depth chart.
All right, we're up against it here. Where can everybody hear the show? When's it on and what channel? Go ahead, go do the whole thing.
SiriusXM, Fantasy Sports Radio, Sirius 210, XM87, me, Bob Harris, your bald brother, Mike Dempsey.
Oh, my other brother. These are all my bald brothers. Oh, my God.
Eastern time, Monday through Friday. Come check it out. We talk about fantasy football. We talk to celebrities. We talk about sports. We talk about wrestling. We had Dolph Ziggler on a couple of days ago. You can find it all, my friend. Thank you for having me on.
Always a pleasure. We'll be right back on Sports Grid right after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. I'm still on my own journey, but I want to be transparent with you because as I was posting all the highlights of my life on social media, I was breaking down. And too many people fall victim to the picture-perfect image of the high life, so I created a space to discuss the good and the bad. We can laugh, man. We gonna learn. And most of all, I hope to inspire you to go on this journey with me to better mental health. This is gonna be your church, your turn-up, and everything in between. So join me on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, a safe space for every kind of person. Listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Mm-hmm. watching Sports Grid. Get on the grid.
And welcome back. Craig and Joe here with you as we dive back into the FanDuel Sportsbook. They have all kinds of odds for the 2020 baseball season, and probably, I would say, over the next few days, you can get more opportunities to do that. And I guess, Joe, look, I mean, you live in New Jersey. Your opportunities are certainly there. And do you think that, is there anything in particular of anything that we've discussed thus far in baseball that has piqued your interest to the degree that you're willing to throw some big dollars on it?
Yeah, I'll tell you what, man. I'm starting to enjoy the Francisco Lindor MVP odds at 12-1. I really like that one. Even though it's the chalk, I'm getting basically 3-1 odds on Gerrit Cole, who I went back and looked at Gerrit Cole over, I would say, well, what was his last, 60-game stretch, basically, or whatever that might be the equivalent. And he had an ERA under 2 with over 100-plus strikeouts. And I was like, wow, that is basically, you look at his August and September of last season, it is practically as good as Yu Darvish, if not better in some ways. And I think there's a real possibility that Gerrit Cole could go 10-0 in this season and have an ERA under 2. I think that's possible. And if so, he's going to win that Cy Young. And I think that award is a little bit more wide open in the American League, where it's him and everybody else. Because I don't think the Houston narrative is going to be super, where the media wants to be with Verlander and Bregman and those kind of guys giving out awards to them. Right. But I feel like Gerrit Cole, That's easy. That's an easy one for everybody. It's a New York media market. If he's dazzling, if he's spectacular, if he's everything that he was supposed to be, man, that seems like a lock. And yeah, it's the chalk and it's boring. But I think at the same time, you look at it, I think there's opportunity there. I'm also really liking Juan Soto, who last time I checked was about 9-1 MVP odds in the National League. I'm a big fan, Craig. You know it. And I'm just not going to stop that wagon. I'm going to be the guy all season running the Juan Soto Express. I'm going to be right there. I'm the engineer. Toot toot, baby. Juan Soto MVP. So there's a lot of fun stuff out there right now. How about you?
If Washington does very well, I mean, he's got no offensive competition there, particularly on that team. There's no Harper. There's no Rendon. So that does make some sense. Mm-hmm. Look, I haven't found anything yet that I think has extreme value, but you never know that by the time next week comes, I don't know how I would bet it because I live here in Florida. So,
well, if only you had a friend.
Have to call somebody.
I've only had a friend who lived in New Jersey.
Yeah, this is true.
Who you saw every day. Maybe you had a relationship with.
I don't know. It's a tough one. I'll have to come up with it.
Last time we did something like that, I lost a lot of money on a guy named Minshew. And
it didn't work out. Although I still don't feel terrible about that bet, actually.
Oh, no. Look, at the time, it was a good bet at the time. Unfortunately, it didn't work out. And look, there's another lesson, right? Sometimes we overthink things. Kyler Murray was the favorite going in. Kyler Murray was the favorite coming out.
Was he? I thought Jacobs won the rookie of the year.
Was it? Did Jacobs actually win it? I thought it was Kyler Murray. I could be wrong there.
I think Jacobs won rookie of the year. Yeah.
Ah, well, then there you go. So those were the two favorites, right? We went off the board with Minshew. So I apologize. My bad, Josh Jacobs. I don't want to take any awards away from you. I apologize. So.
All right, let's go through, will these teams make the playoffs in 2020? And we'll just do the odds of the teams where it's somewhat fun to do. I mean, we're not going to do a yes at plus, 25,000 or anything like that. So Atlanta Braves have some interesting odds. Their yes is minus 132, so that's risking $132 to win 100, which means it's a pretty heavy lean toward the Braves making it. And the no is plus 108. Of course, they made the postseason the last 2 years. They missed the postseason the previous 4 years before that. And building both sides of it, on the positive side, Joe, they have one of the most dynamic offensive players in baseball at Ronald Acuna. They also have one of the best second basemen in Ozzie Albies. They've rebuilt that bullpen, provided Will Smith is there, along with Melanson and Shane Green. It's a very solid team from start to finish. Starting pitching is also very good. Shorter season with Soroka, Fulton, Awich. I mean, there's not a lot of holes there for them to be in the mix. That's the positive. The negative is they've sort of gotten off to a bad start because Freddie Freeman not being there, that is a negative to start. Pache, who knows what he would have been, but it doesn't look like he's going to be part of this as well. And I don't know that that would factor, honestly, in to them making the postseason or not. But they have had some COVID issues to start. They're one of the teams that got hit particularly hard when you lose your best player or second best player, that definitely can be a factor. But the dynamic here is that, I mean, no one in the NL East, I don't think, is going to have this locked up until the last week of the season. So it may be guessing somewhat if the Braves get in or not. And that's what's a little scary here for me. So I would lean toward yes, but I'm not willing to risk $130 to win 100 on it.
You know what? Maybe 2 days ago I wasn't, but now I am. this DeGrom injury.
Really?
No, not because it's Puig. Because DeGrom.
Oh, yeah, okay.
Because of the bullpen implosion that's going on in Philadelphia. I'm looking at what was supposed to be the elite division in baseball, the National League East. It's falling apart in front of us. And there's another injury on the Braves, even, you failed to mention, which is Cole Hamels, who was the big offseason addition for the starting pitching rotation, who is probably not going to pitch. I mean, let's be honest. Like, if you get anything from Cole Hamels at all this year, like, that would be stunning to me. I think Foltynewicz will be okay. Soroka will be okay. Max Fried, to me, is the guy. That's the guy that has to be good, and that's the guy that has to kind of be above board for this team to really take off. And I actually believe in Max Fried. I think he can do that. Yes, Soroka is going to be the opening day starter, but I don't think he is the scarier at bat. I think Max Fried is. And this has nothing to do with the Puig addition. This has to do with the Puig addition telling you that the Braves are in this. The Braves are not waiting around. The Braves are going to be aggressive because they see a window here with all this talent that you mentioned, with some of these young pitchers too, to just go in there and try to make this work. And you hope that Freddie Freeman at some point in time is back. But I think with the Puig and the Ozuna signing and the Hamels at least attempt, all tells you that the Braves are trying their best to go all in here. And look, you're going to need guys like Austin Riley to step up. You're going to need some of these ancillary players as well, especially when Freeman is out, to step up a little bit in that void. Nobody's Freddie Freeman, but somebody's got to at least kind of step up, not just Acuna. There's got to be more than just him and Albies carrying this team. Some other guys on this lineup here have to figure things out. And look, I think Ozuna, I think Puig, I think that's enough there to help. But it's more also to the point of, I keep looking around and, yeah, I think the Nats, believe it or not, are still the class. Nobody has pitching like the Nats have. And this is a tournament. And I think in a tournament, you have to bank on the Nats being the best team in the National League East right now. And the Braves right now, I think, are the second. And I think that makes them a playoff team when all said and done. So I would definitely lean towards the over here. I don't think they're going to miss out, because I think the Atlanta Braves are going to get aggressive here and make a push for it.
Yeah, and they'll make deals if they need to, for sure. Yeah. I would love to know that Will Smith is 100% healthy and is going to be with the team. I think that that's a major piece that they got. But they really didn't attack starting pitching that hard, but they felt like building a big bullpen was part of it. And I think that,
well, you know, they tried for Bumgarner last year and that didn't happen. They didn't want to trade him San Francisco. Then they tried.
Yeah, I thought they'd end up with Keuchel.
You know what? Yeah, you would have thought that was an easy fit, but I guess they didn't want to pay that much money for him.
No, they obviously didn't. And then I thought they'd end up with Donaldson. They didn't end up with
they didn't want to pay Donaldson either. They're trying to be aggressive, but in a cost-effective manner. I don't know if you could pull it off, but hey, who's to say they can't? I think the Will Smith signing is very important, though. And in this 60-game situation where the bullpen's going to be leaned on heavily, the sooner he is back and healthy, the better, because they are going to need him absolutely there in this first month of the season. Make no mistake about that. So keep a close eye on that one.
Yep. All right, let's move on to the Chicago Cubs. The Cubs in 2020 on the FanDuel Sportsbook are basically giving you $114 back on a $100 bet if they make the postseason. They're plus 114, but the heavy lean is on the Cubs actually not making it. Now, the Cubs made the postseason 4 years in a row, 15, 16, 17, and 18. And then they fell back last year. They also have a rookie manager this year in David Ross, so remains to be seen how he'll end up being. We know that anytime Joe Maddon is the manager of a team, he is definitely one of those few guys that I would say is a plus one or a plus two or maybe even a plus three. And David Ross is definitely not that guy. Rizzo, that's scary that Rizzo's already hurt to this point, and we know that he's had health issues away from baseball in the past as well, so hopefully he ends up playing this year, but the back issues always are scary somewhat. Pitching-wise, Cubs are okay, a little bit on the aging side. Darvish probably has seen his best days, although he could, you know, turn it back up this year, no doubt. Lester toward the end of his career, for sure. I think leaning no is probably the right call here, but I do think the Cubs are going to battle this thing right down to the last week, very similar to the Braves. I don't think Milwaukee's pulling away. I doubt the Cardinals will pull away. And so it'll come down to how badly the Cubs really wanted, because, Joe, in the offseason, the Cubs did not show that they really wanted anything. They didn't make any moves.
No, they didn't. But look, they're also paying a lot of money to a lot of guys, too. They pay a ton of money to Yu Darvish, a ton of money to Lester, a ton of money to Kimbrel, and paying money to Rizzo. There's a lot of money on the books right now. But I wouldn't count the Cubs out, because Schwarber, Ian Happ, there's a lot of other good players here that we haven't even scratched the surface of how good they could be. My problem is I think Lester is done. I watched him pitch a ton last year, and he just looked like a guy at the end. Now, we've seen Lester look like at the end before and bounce back. But last year was even more towards the end of the line than I had seen in previous years. They still have Kyle Hendricks, who's still a nice pitcher there. Quintana obviously wasn't healthy. That's another, you know, ding to this rotation. For the dings and dangs of today on Fantasy Sports Today, that's another one. But what they do have going for them is experience. Rizzo, Bryant, Kimbrel, a lot of these guys have been there, done that. So they know what it takes. And I never want to count out a team that has experience like that. And I think that makes them a really dicey situation when you're in the wagering department, because, yeah, they're kind of tempting you to go over there a little bit in one direction. But, man, like, this is a team that could get hot over this period of time. This is a team that could backdoor their way. What if Cincinnati isn't all we think they could be in year one of all these other pieces together for the first time? So there's a lot more questions than answers here. I feel really good about the Braves making the playoffs. Less so about the Cubs, but I would not put it past the Cubs, so I'm going to stay away from that number.
All right, fair enough. Coming up next, it is time for us to take a look at my fantasy team for 2020 in the League of Alternative Baseball Reality. Yesterday, we looked at Joe's club. Today, we'll look at mine. About 4 months ago, I think it was 5 months ago, I drove up to St. Petersburg from South Florida and spent a day there, did a draft, came out feeling pretty good about it, as most people do. Honestly, did not remember a lot of my team until I went back and looked yesterday. This is totally true. And with moves coming up this weekend, I guess it is time for me to decide if I like my team or if I need to make some moves. We'll touch on that next as you're watching Fantasy Sports Today. Joe Pizzapia and Craig Mish. Follow us on Twitter, of course, at SportsGrid. You can follow me on Twitter at Craig Mish. Follow Joe on Twitter at JoePizzapia17. And also, don't forget, coming up a little bit later, Scott Farrell going coast to coast right here on Sports Grid. We're back with more right after this.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
And back in late February, the League of Alternative Baseball Reality participants made their way to Florida, the west coast of Florida, in St. Petersburg, and drove up from South Florida to do this draft. It was an auction draft and a mixed league auction, I believe the first of its kind for the League of Alternative Baseball Reality. And spring training was just, you know, sort of getting going and happening, and I had this draft and auctioned off some players, and it would take us hours to go through each auction value in every single player, and I don't think that people in particular are really interested in that. But we can take a look at the results and see if there's any tinkering that I'm going to need to do to start the season. And so I took Joe's challenge to actually find the team.
And, just find it. Just that was the mere challenge.
And I found the team. I have a team going into the year. And surprisingly, and pleasantly surprised, that thus far, 16th of July, everybody I have seems to be healthy. I mean, and listen, if the general manager of the Astros is going to say that the healthiest team is going to win the World Series this year, then I am going to say the healthiest team is going to win in fantasy baseball, too. So I'm feeling pretty good. I only have one guy on the COVID list. Not bad.
That's not bad. That's all you can hope for. Yesterday's roster, I think, I had Eduardo Rodriguez. I had Cole Calhoun, but he came back. So, yeah, this is a relatively healthy roster. Craig obviously has the opposite that I do in terms of philosophy with two catcher league, because he paid up for probably the best fantasy catcher on the board. So kick us off here. Take us with your boy JT and the rest of the infield.
Yeah, I spent the most money on catchers in this league, actually. It's not something I normally do, but I really do like Will Smith. So I ended up with Realmuto and Smith, both, of course, paying, one paying almost $30, the other paying in the 20s. At first base, I'll put Josh Bell there and hope that what we saw in the first half of last year is similar to the first 60 games of this season. Love Max Muncy in this sort of format and the ability to move him all around. That was a specific target that I went into in the draft this year, so I ended up getting Muncy. I was happy with that. I'm very high on Gavin Lux on the Dodgers. I did not go in thinking that I was going to get him or anything like that, but he was cheap enough, I think under $10, where I ended up pulling the trigger there. Brian Anderson of the Marlins gives me flexibility, has qualification at right field, has qualification at third base. Maybe that's the most important thing in fantasy this year. Who would have thought that? Manny Machado is a third baseman, but qualifies at short. I thought that was a major, major reason why I went after him.
Absolutely.
And going into the season, I thought that he was a potential MVP candidate. Now that I'm thinking back, that's why I paid up dearly for Machado, because I just think that offensively speaking, there aren't a lot of shortstops that can come close to him.
What did you pay for him, if I may ask you?
In the 30s somewhere?
You know, it's funny because in most drafts, especially auction, I found him to be discounted in the low 30s or high 20s when typically speaking, he is a high
31.
Yeah, like that's about where he's been going back in February and March. And I thought that was grossly undervalued considering what kind of stats he can give you and what kind of second half he had after he kind
of shortstop. That was the whole thing.
And shortstop. Yeah, the whole thing there. I think that's probably one of your best ROIs in this infield too.
Maybe. And then offensively speaking, what I always do is when I think I have enough offense and I think I'm good, like with power, then I go one more because I'm like, I'm probably wrong. That's what I say to myself. And so that's when I grabbed Encarnacion to just not put it over the top, but to get me where I think I'm supposed to be. Encarnacion has got to have a good year in him with that offense on the White Sox, I would think.
Every year he does, right? You just got to hope that the slow start doesn't mean slow starting in July.
I really do think that he turns into Nelson Cruz for the next few years.
Well, let's hope so, because Edwin Encarnacion has been one of the guys you can really depend on in season-long roto. It's been a little frustrating in the head-to-head formats because of the slow starts sometimes and a little bit of the streakiness in there. Nelson Cruz does not have the same kind of streaks, or the negative ones at least, that Encarnacion has. But looking at your roster, you have a lot of power coming from the infield, which is good because when you look at the outfield version here, there's less power to be had.
Yeah, only one guy.
Well, I wouldn't say no, but certainly less. Certainly not.
So looking at my outfielders, I spent the most money on Acuna. I wanted to go after that. The reason why is because I just didn't feel like there was any bona fide stolen base guy. And I was like, this guy is that. And so home runs, of course, he's there. But Acuna is chasing some 40-40s and some 50-50s. And I wanted to get him. And I just feel comfortable getting the best player in the National League. So I did. Yeah. Lorenzo Cain, solid, steady, 15 steals, hopefully 15 home runs. I have to hope he has one more good year left in him. I'm not sure, but that is a little, not much of a risk, $8-$9, something like that. David Dahl was not somebody I targeted at all going into the season, but again, I believe he was a cheap price and, in the $10, $11 range, and so I pulled the trigger on him. Went in wanting Shogo Akiyama on the Reds. I'm happy I ended up with him. And I think that he provides a little bit more power than people are thinking. I went back and I looked at all his numbers overseas. I think 15 home runs in a 162 is possible. How that translates to 60, I have no idea. But look, I am lacking in the power department in the outfield. I'll throw Dyson in there on Pittsburgh. This is a busted pick, clearly, because he's going to get traded in 30 days and not steal any bases. And that's it. I mean, there's not, when you're drafting a one trick guy, which Dyson is, and Dyson could have given me 20 steals in 100 games before the trade deadline, this would have been a fine pick. But now it's not. And now it's 5 steals and he's on the.
Hey, you know what? Those 5 steals might matter. I mean, it's crazy.
Right, but he's going to get. He is a 1,000% trade candidate by Pittsburgh. He's on a 1-year deal.
That's a high percentage.
And he is the guy in the 10th inning that they're going to put on second base to run.
You mean the Herb Washington?
Exactly.
I can't wait for the first guy, the first pinch runner. I hope it's an opening night. I hope Craig gets this dream of his and has this moment where that guy gets out there at second base and steals third and then just like somehow steals home or ends up, scoring on a wild pitch or something like that. It'd be amazing.
So Dyson, I have Sam Hilliard. I also have in the outfield. I'm not sure what's going on with Charlie Blackmon. Is he back or not? Like, they reported that he was out again or something yesterday.
I don't know, man. I don't know.
I'm not sure what his story is, but Hilliard is
looking like a better investment every day, though.
Yeah, I'm fine with that. He's an extra outfielder. Maybe he starts for Dyson for me because, again, look, I got to call it what it is. I would never just take a steals guy in a 60-game season. There's way too much risk with that. And a guy like this that's going to get traded, it's just throwing any dollars I put on him. And then my two extra guys, Tommy Edman, who I plays feel like for. I'll be able to play at some point this year. A guy, as long as he doesn't go down, someone will go down for the Cardinals. Edman will play at that position every day, third, right. Short, second, first, outfield. Mm-hmm. As long as he's healthy, he's going to play. And then my last reserve pick in the whole thing was Miguel Andujar. He was free. So
I love that pick. I love both those guys because you nailed two things. Can they swing the bat a little bit? Yep. Andujar can swing the bat a lot. And I don't understand why everybody's so comfortable with the idea of Gio Urshela being the starting third baseman for the Yankees. Gio Urshela has a career 700 OPS in like eight minor league seasons.
He had a great year. He had a great year.
It does not make him a great player. It does not make him an everyday player because if he was, he wouldn't have bounced around for as long as he did. I am not giving up on Miguel Andujar. I think what you have here on this team with Muncy, with Andujar, with Edmund is a lot of flexibility, which I think is going to be super important this year. So actually, from that standpoint, I like it. I like that you made up for a little deficit in the outfield with taking some Colorado guys because you're going to get a couple cheaper home runs there too.
I always have Colorado guys on my team, and I take a shot. Sometimes it works, sometimes it does. Look, I've had Brendan Rodgers on my team the last 2 years. That didn't work out.
Well, he's going to play at some point. I mean, I don't know when.
I hope so.
I'm trying to think of a player that I think is as talented as Rodgers that it's taking so long to see him. It's a while now. Like, it's taking a long time.
Well, he was the third pick overall, I think.
I'm just saying, like, you know, usually a guy like this in this current climate of Major League Baseball is already up and playing. So, I mean, we are really in a weird spot here. It's very rare that we suppress a value of a player this
was hurt too.
That's fair. It's fair, but still, look, I like the offense. I think you have a lot
more stolen bases. The offense is fine. The pitching is going to be a little questionable, so let's go through that. So my starting pitching, Shane Bieber, who I felt was an ace, but the cheapest ace of the aces, and I did target Bieber going into this, so I ended up with him. Max Fried was not somebody that I targeted, but as the draft was going on and I felt like I was really going to need some strikeouts, I believe I paid 17, if I'm not mistaken, for Max Fried.
Terrible, but
Zach Gallen in a full season. I love Zach Gallen. I bet very heavy on Zach Gallen to go over his win totals. He is clearly not nearly as valuable in a 60-game season as he is in a 162. And the same thing goes for Aaron Civale, who I am also a very big fan of, but he's going to pitch fourth or fifth in that Cleveland rotation. And you can't start stacking those kind of guys in a 60-game season because they're just simply not going to get the opportunity. So I'm kind of stuck. I got to bump Stroman up. He'll probably, you know, be on my first week roster for sure. AJ Puck could be okay, but we know that he's only going to make a handful of starts. Urquidy is hurt right now. He could have helped me out a little bit. And Frank Stanfill, my former host, convinced me to take Spencer Turnbull and told me he wouldn't let me down. So I said, all right, fine. He saw something in him. And I'm like, all right, whatever. I didn't believe in it, but I did it for him. I took Spencer Turnbull. That's why he was there. Over to my relievers. This is also, you know what? My relievers are actually okay because I got a little bit of a swap here.
Well, Nick Anderson, I really like, and Helsley looks like he might have the job. And so is Miguel.
Kella is out, but it looks like Helsley is the Cardinals closer. So I think that I may have gotten a swap there. Mm-hmm. I don't know what Kella's going to be, and no one's going to take him in a trade. So he's kind of stuck in Pittsburgh, I think. But Kella, Anderson is questionable. Anderson's numbers are going to be awesome, and I think he's going to be a superstar.
I'm telling
you
right now.
I don't know about saves, though. I don't know.
I don't care. You have to play him for the ratios in this format. Like, you have to get him out there.
Well, I like him a lot, and I'm happy with him.
You have to be starting him. You have to.
McGill maybe gets saves. Maybe he doesn't. He was at the very end. Helsley was a reserve pick. So, and now I believe he's going to be the closer of the Cardinals. The pitching needs a lot of work. This is not the kind of pitching staff that I would have taken in a 60-gamer. If I was in a 60-gamer, I'm taking the number one starter or the number two starter, maybe the number three starter on some teams. I am not backloading my team with Puck and Gallen.
No, that's fair. Look, and also what happens in an auction.
But that's the deal there. I'm telling you right now, but if I had to do it over again in a full year, I wouldn't have changed anything because it doesn't matter if you're the third or fourth starter if you end up getting 25 starts. Fair. It matters this year, though.
I just want to get this in here before the end of the show because obviously what happens here, we're trying to use this to educate other people. When you spend up a catcher twice, you got to take a hit somewhere, and what you end up taking a hit was it's starting pitching, unfortunately. That's where it ended up happening. Now, look, over a long season, you could play the waiver wire, but it's not a long season anymore either, so I think that's where you have to give and take sometimes with auctions and how you want to allocate your funds. By the way, I don't see Lucas Giolito or Montas or Kluber or Gerrit Cole in this rotation. I got a lot of shade from my rotation yesterday. I don't see any of these guys here.
I don't remember that show. It was a long time ago. All right, that'll do it for the show. Thanks again to everybody who watched and listened to our program today. Thanks to John Sheeran and Michael Fabiano for coming on the program. For Joe Pizzapia, I'm Craig Mish. Thanks to Brett, Danny, Ryan for putting our program together. I hope you guys have a great day. We'll come back and wrap the weekend up. We go tomorrow, so don't go away. Speak to you then.
SportsGrid.com. Betting insights and entertainment at your fingertips 24/7 as our team covers the most important topics in sports wagering. Real-time odds, predictive betting models, expert picks, and more. Want the edge? Then get on the grid. SportsGrid.com.
Hey everyone, it's Michelle Williams, and I love being able to share my story with you on my podcast, Checking In with Michelle Williams, where my guests and I, we get real as we share the ups and downs of our mental health journeys, and I'd love for you to join me. Hey, it's going to be your church and your turn up. So listen to Checking In with Michelle Williams every Tuesday, a part of the Black Effect on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.